Okay. Right. Does this bother you if this is standing there?
No, should be fine.
Or I can put it on the... I can actually put it on the chair. Let's try that. And at least the thing claims that the microphones are... I mean, it does a reasonable job. Right, good morning. Any questions?
Yes.
Yeah.
On the first problem?
Yeah?
When you say the A element subsets of N, do you mean you're looking subsets of N, or... N is
of 1 to N. Yeah. So, for example, if you take N equals 4 and you take two element subsets, there are 4 choose. Okay, well, sorry, with 4, it's exactly half. So let's take N equals 5 and choose two element subsets. There are 5, choose 2, which is 10 such subsets. And the claim is... the action on these subsets is primitive. So in this case, if you take F4 for SN, or I think I'm just asking for SN. Mm-hmm. I mean, for AN it also works. But so in the case of 5 and 2, you would have S5, you have, which has order 120. You have 10 such subsets, because that's 5 choose 2. So a set stabilizer, and it's obviously clear the group acts transitively on them. I mean, there you can immediately write down the permutation. So you have your stabilizer of one such set has index 10, so has order 12. Okay. What group is this? It's not hard to see, it's actually an S. 3 on the 3 other points, cross S2 on the 2 points which you're stabilizing. Mm-hmm. Right? That's how such a point stabilizer would look. Okay. Now the question is, you want to show it's primitive, the action is primitive, that would imply this subgroup would be maximal. Indeed, in the case of S12, if it was larger, what order could it have? It would have to be a divisor of 120, and it would have to be a multiple of 12. And the only possibility, basically, is 24 and 60, I think. If it was 60, it would be a normal subgroup, but it is clearly not. The stabilizer doesn't lie in A5. So it can't be E5, so the 60 is ruled out. Why is the 24 ruled out? Is that obvious there's the points. It doesn't lie in a point stabilizer, which would be the S4. Yeah, you might have to do a little bit more work to rule that out if you do it by groups. So, yeah, doing it with the action, and that works generically. Is in the end easier. Okay? Other questions? No? Okay, so I did on Tuesday basically. Hey,
sorry.
Don't worry. We did the exam, I did the missing bits of the last homework. So let me continue where we stopped last week when I ran severely over. What I want to do is to look at the structure of primitive groups, and I want to get structural information. So primitive group means a transitive subgroup of SN which acts primitively, and I want to get structural information about how these groups have to look. And in some way, actually, the goal is, or it turns out it works. I mean, you can always have a goal which is not reachable. But it will turns out that in the end, we will get sufficient information which basically will allow us to construct lists of primitive groups. The input will be information about simple groups. That's something we can't reduce further. But basic, and there might still be certain smaller things we need to classify, but basically we will get to a complete classification there. Well, for a suitable meaning of complete. Right, and the main ingredient is to say we know if a group is prim. Okay, if it doesn't have any normal subgroup, it's simple, and then we can't do much. So we look at normal subgroups. We know normal subgroups have to act transitively. And they act transitively. And we are looking at the extreme case where transitive in some ways hardest, namely normal subgroups of the smallest possible order. These are called minimal normal subgroups, and what we have seen is last time a minimal normal subgroup is always, so we have seen that if in general, if n is in G, well, then I want, if, well, G has to be at least finite, if this is a minimal normal subgroup, then n is isomorphic to T cross T, where T is simple, and, so it's a direct product of simple groups of the same type with itself. And such a group sometimes is called characteristically simple. A subgroup is characteristic if it's not just normal one, but invariant under all automorphisms. So this is saying, well, the group itself is not simple, but doesn't have a subgroup which is characteristic, which is invariant under all automorphisms. Well, basically, you can mix them. Yes, these are normal, each of the factors, but you can mix them up under obvious automorphisms. And that's what's happening. Okay. So that holds generically for minimal normal subgroups. They have this structure. Okay, so that is one minimal normal subgroup. There might be several. And if we do this, we get immediately the following definition, which is called the SOCL. The SOCL of G is the subgroup SOC of G, which is is the subgroup generated by all normal subgroups N, where N is minimal normal subgroup of G. So I just take all of them and I take the group generated by them. Okay. And that definition of SOCL exists in other cases. For example, if you're talking about modules, so that's basically vector spaces with some kind of ring acting on them. If you talk about modules, the SOCL of a module is generated by all minimal submodules. That's something you can always do, and we have finite things, so we don't need to worry about what is it if there are infinitely many. You can similarly look at something, not what is generated by all the minimal ones, but if you intersect all the maximal ones. If you have a module that is called the radical, in the case of a group, it is called the Frattini subgroup, named after an Italian mathematician who came up with that first. Okay, but we don't need that here, it's just that it's the obvious dual concept. And when people look at modules, their SOCLs are obvious things to do. Here we're doing this. Okay. So the SOCL is generated by all minimal normal subgroups. What I claim is, and that is the next lemma, that the SOCL actually is a direct product of some minimal normal subgroups. Not necessarily of all. Okay, why not all? The easiest example is take a vector space. As vector spaces are groups, abelian groups. What are the minimal normal subgroups? That's the one-dimensional subspaces, right? What do the one-dimensional subspaces together generate? Well, they generate the whole vector space. So the circle of a vector space is just the full vector space itself. And you've seen in linear algebra, yes, that vector space is isomorphic to the one dimension to F. If we look at finite dimensional spaces, it's isomorphic to F to the n, where F is basically a one dimensional vector space over the field. Okay, but you have more one dimensional spaces than the dimension of your whole vector space. Right, so it's not the direct product of all of them, it's the direct product of some of them. There might be some which are which exist, but where they together are in the span of others. Okay, so that's why I'm saying here of some of them, and not just saying, sorry.
Yep. Sorry, is that decomposition going to be unique in any way?
Yes. It is unique in the sense of that you will always get the same isomorphism types with same multiplicities. And that is not hard to see. That's Jordan Hölder. In the case of groups.
Right.
If you look at modules, you get a similar theorem. And let me see, is that obvious? So there is something which is called the Kroll-Schmidt-Atsumaya theorem, which gives you something about decomposition as a direct product. I don't know whether you need the full theorem for the case of the circle. Yeah. Can actually, if you have something non-abelian, you could have, yeah, you, depending of what is happening, you might, the minimal ones, actually, the non-abelian ones, actually, the subgroups should be unique. I think it's basically in the abelian case where you need to be a bit, where you might need to make a choice. Okay, so, this proof is much easier than the one here, even though it looks by theorem rather similar.
Sorry, related question. Yeah. Do the minimal normal subgroups all occur with multiplicity 1, or could I need multiple copies of one of them?
What do you mean? Every minimal subgroup exists once in the group. What do you mean with multiple copies?
Well, I mean, some of them could write in the circle as a direct product. Okay.
So it's... I mean, it's an inner direct product. What I say is there are a couple of minimal normal subgroups in there. That's what will happen in the proof, which intersect trivially and together generate the group and generate the circle, and it's the direct product of these of them, of those minimal normal subgroups. And some of them might be isomorphic. So if you look at it as an abstract decomposition, yes, you clearly have it. Yeah. I mean, take A5 cross A5 cross A5. The circle of this is the whole group. And it has three copies of A5 there. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. So the proof is a variant of induction, which often occurs in group theory. In some way, you could say you're doing induction over by order of the group or composition length of the group or some measurement. And the way it is done, basically because it's easier to write down, is rather to say, let's assume it's not true and let's look at a minimal counterexample. Or let's look at, in this case, what I'm going to do is I look at the largest subgroup which has this property, and I will show it has to be the whole group. Okay? So, let me use the notes just so I'm actually using the same letters for objects as it is written down. So, so I want to call this M. Let M, and I want to take a subgroup of the circle of G, which is maximal, subject to that M is normal in G, and M is a direct product of minimal normals, minimal normal subgroups of G. Okay. Right. So that such groups clearly exist, because I could just take one, if I take one minimal normal subgroup, it is normal in G, and it is a direct product of minimal normal subgroups, namely a direct product of one of them. Or you could even take the trivial one. Okay. So, what I need to show is this is equal to the circle. Let's assume it is not. So, if M is not equal to the circle of G, well, then it means it doesn't contain everything. So, in particular, it cannot contain everything which generates the circle. So, then there exists a normal subgroup of G which is minimally normal, so it's lying in the circle, so that N is, I want to say it's not contained, N is not contained in M. Right? Because if it would contain all of them, it would contain the generators and it would be equal to the circle. Okay? So there must be one which is not contained in there. Well, then, what can I tell about N intersection M? M is normal in G, N is normal in G, so N intersection M is also normal in G. And it is contained in N. So, but N was minimally normal, so that means they must intersect trivially. Right? So, you have two normal subgroups which intersect trivially. Well, now I can look at the group generated by N and M. That is strictly larger than M, because I've added something which was not in M before. It's strictly larger, and it fulfills these two conditions. It's generated by two normal subgroups, so it's normal in G. And because, this group is actually equal to N cross M, right? Because that's the definition of a direct product. They intersect trivially and they generate it together. Okay. But M was a direct product of minimally normal subgroups. If I take of that the direct product with another minimal normal subgroup, it's the direct product of minimal normal subgroups. So, fulfills the two conditions, and that contradicts the choice that M is maximal. And we're done. Okay. Right. So we know the circle, in general, the circle of a group is direct product of minimal normal subgroups. And we have seen every minimal normal subgroup is a direct product of simple groups, which are isomorphic. So the circle itself is a direct product of simple groups. But they could be of different types. So what we get is a corollary. The circle of G is the direct product of simple groups isomorphic to where Ti is simple. But they are not necessarily all of the same isomorphism. Take a 5 cross a 6 that has is its own circle, and a 5 is not isomorphic to a 6. Or take you could take C3 cross C2, that already would. Okay, right, yeah, so that's generically, and that doesn't need anything about permutation groups, that's the circle of a group. So, what I now want to do is to go back to the case of permutation groups. And for basically, in the case of primitive groups, I want to show that the circle, that this is actually far more restricted. The circle either is minimally normal or it's a direct product of only two factors, and these two factors would have to be isomorphic. Okay. But that clearly doesn't hold in general, so somewhere I need to use permutation information, and that's what I'm going to use next. So, that's the following definition. A permutation group G acts semi-regularly on omega if the stabilizer in G of some point omega is trivial for all little omega in omega. So if every point stabilizer is trivial. So we can note that regular corresponds to transitive plus semi-regular. Right? Regular would be the action on the elements of a group on its elements by right multiplication. That is transitive. That is clearly semi-regular. And vice versa, if I'm semi-regular, if I'm transitive and semi-regular, well, then every point stabilizer is trivial because of semi-regular, the action is transitive, so it's the action on cosets of a subgroup of a point stabilizer. Well, the point stabilizer is the trivial subgroup, so it's the action of elements by right multiplication. And that's where this term semi-regular comes from, because it's a little bit less than regular. So, for example, if you take the group generated by the double transposition 1, 2, 3, 4. That is not transitive, but it's clearly semi-regular.
At least in S4.
In S4, right. Yes. Yes. And that's why I'm always writing a domain. Yes, if you take if you take this as a subgroup of S5, it is not. Yeah. And that's where I think a lot of people working with permutation groups are sometimes a bit sloppy. You always have a domain somewhere in the back of your mind, but it is not. You have to be careful that you don't at some point change your domain, because then things, properties hold, don't hold. Or it's the question, what is a permutation group? Is a permutation group a set of permutations, or is it a set of permutations together with a domain? And You can do it one way or the other, but you can't have them both at the same time. Okay. Right. Now, I have one easy lemma which describes that some subgroup has to be semi-regular. So let G be a subgroup of the symmetric group on a set omega, and I want this to be transitive. And I'm looking at the centralizer of G in S omega. Let C be the centralizer in S omega of G. So all the permutations in this on omega which centralize G, which commute with all elements of G. Okay. And I claim this is semi-regular. Okay. So, in some way, what is happening there is some kind of duality. If my group gets larger, clearly the centralizer has to become smaller. It can't get larger. Anything which commutes with a larger set has to commute with a smaller set, right? So potentially the centralizer gets smaller. And in some way this is telling me some kind of point where something switches. As soon as the group itself becomes transitive, then it can map everything there. The centralizer has to become semi-regular, so all point stabilizers have to be trivial. Semi-regular in some way, it can't be very large. Okay, so why is this the case? So let an element little c be in the stabilizer in the centralizer of a point omega. I want to show this is semi-regular, so I need to show every point stabilizer is trivial, so I pick an element in a point stabilizer, and I need to show this element has to be trivial. Right? So, how do I show that this element is trivial? I'm going to show that it fixes any point. Right? That's how I show that a permutation is trivial. So I pick an arbitrary point, delta in omega. Okay, and I need to show that C will map delta to itself. So then I know exists an element G in G. G acts transitively, so there exists an element which will map omega to delta. That's just transitive, right? So I have delta is equal to the image of omega under G. Okay. But C stabilized omega, so that will be the same as the image of omega under C times G, right? And because C centralizes little omega, that's the same as omega to the G times C. And omega to the G was delta. That's how I defined little g. So that's delta to the C. Right? So delta fixes every point. Sorry, C fixes every point. And that means C is the identity. So arbitrary point stabilizer elements in C are the identity, so the point stabilizer is semi-regular. Okay. Right. So. And I mean, all of these things I'm doing today, they are in these lecture notes which are posted on the web page. It's chapter two. There, I mean, there is an obvious section called primitive groups, and that's where it's taken from. Okay. So let G be primitive on a set omega. And then one of two possibilities holds. Then either I have the socle of G is minimally normal, or the socle of G bar or is not, then it wouldn't be a particularly interesting lemma. So that's in some way the interesting statement. It's equal to a direct product of two minimal normal subgroups with N, comma M are both minimal normal in G, and N is isomorphic to M and is not abelian. So the statement is, if the socle is not minimally normal, it actually is a direct product of only two minimal normal subgroups, and they actually are both isomorphic and they're both not abelian. Okay. So
G here is still a permutation group.
Yes, because I'm saying it's primitive on omega. Yeah. And what is happening, and I might be slightly sloppy here, but that is almost deliberate. I can look at a group as a group of permutations, or I can look at a group action, which would give me a homomorphism into a permutation group. And when looking at the image of this action, or in general looking at the action, it's typically convenient to look at it as a group of permutations. And that's what I'm doing here. But I really want, in the end, I want to use the theorem for arbitrary group actions. Okay. So what I need to show is if A doesn't hold, B holds. Let's assume not A, show B. Okay, so I assume the socle is not minimally normal. Then it is the direct I know the socle is a direct product of minimal normal subgroups. That's what I've shown here. Now it looks as if I really carefully planned writing on that. I still have the lemma still there just before erasing at the point where I'm using it, but that's frankly sheer dumb luck, dumb luck. So I assume A does not hold A. So then the socle of G, and I can write, because it's an inner direct product, really equal. I don't need to write isomorphic. Is equal to N cross M, where N is minimally normal in G, and M is basically the rest. M are the remaining direct factors. So M is still normal in G, namely that's the remaining direct factors. So I'm just taking the decomposition as a direct product of minimal normal subgroups. And I pick one of them, the first one, and I call this N, and I call the rest M. And I just need to show M is minimally normal. Okay. So I have a direct product. Now what can I tell about N and M? Well, I know already that N and M are both normal subgroups of G. And because G is primitive, I can conclude that N and M are both transitive. Right? I know that N and M are intersecting trivially. And that implies that N lies in the centralizer in G of M, and M lies in the centralizer in G of N. If you have two normal subgroups which intersect trivially, they must centralize each other. Well, because basically that's when you look back at when you saw the definition of a direct product or the construction of a direct product, you've shown that at some point there. If they intersect trivially, they generate together a direct product, and in the direct product they commute. So they both centralize each other. So you have N centralizes a transitive group, so N is semi-regular. M centralizes a transitive group, so M is semi-regular. Okay. So, they are both transitive, they are both semi-regular, so they are both regular. And both must have the cardinality of omega as their cardinality. So we know already they both must have the same order. Okay. Right.
Could you just say, like, assume that N is the smallest minimal component, and then it kind of falls right there? Seems like dirty.
But that would not tell me that I need to show that they're both isomorphic.
Oh, right. Sorry.
So there I need to. Did I actually show you that M must be minimally normal? That M can't be the direct product. Oh yeah, sorry. That will follow automatically. Or will follow very easily. So why can't M be? Why does M have to be minimally normal? Okay. So if M was not minimally normal, M was the direct product of some minimal normal subgroups, right? That's how I got it. I just took the direct product of all factors but N. Then I could write M is equal to A cross B, where A and B are both normal in G. Then I could still write it as a direct product of some normal subgroups which are smaller. But because they are normal in a primitive group, they would have to be transitive. They're both transitive in omega, and that means their orders would have to be at least the order of omega, otherwise they can't be transitive. Right? On the other hand, if this was a product, their order, this would imply that the order of A and B is strictly smaller than the order of M. Because it's a pure one, a proper direct product decomposition. And the order of M is equal to the order of omega. And that obviously is contradicting each other. So, M must be minimally normal. Okay. So I know the SOCL is a direct product of two minimal normal subgroups. I just need to show they're isomorphic. And basically, for that, I need to construct an isomorphism. Okay. So, what I claim is now for an element n in N, there exists a unique element little mn in M such that if I map 1, that's a particular point in omega. I just call it 1. That 1 to the n to the mn is equal to 1. So this is 1 in omega. A particular point. It doesn't really matter which point I pick. I pick 1 and I call it 1. Okay. Why is this the case? Well, n and m both act regularly. So they are on the one hand transitive, so clearly I will have elements which map this image 1 to the n back to 1. That's transitive. But if there were several such elements, I could take the quotient of two of them, and this quotient would lie in the point stabilizer. But the point stabilizer is trivial and semi-regular. So there is or you will take the other definition of regular, a group acts regularly on a domain if for any pair of points there is exactly one element in the group which maps the one point to the other. So that gives me the uniqueness. Okay? So, and that basically is what will give me this isomorphism. So, let phi be a map from N to M, which maps an element little n to the element mn. So, that is clearly a bijection. Right? Because for every element, I have a unique such image. So that shows it's 1 to 1. Why is it on 2? Because I have two finite sets of the same cardinality. Right? So the only thing I need to show is phi is a homomorphism. Then I need to take two elements in N and I call them little k and little n. Okay, and now I'm just mapping some things. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to map 1 under k under n and then under mk and then under mn. Right? These are two elements of N and two elements of M. Okay. What is this? This is the same because M and N commute, I can switch these two elements. So this is 1 under K, MK, N, MN. Okay. And that is, okay, mapping 1 under k and then under mk gives me 1 by the definition of mk. So that is 1, mapping 1 under n and then under mn gives me 1 again. So that is 1 again. Okay, so that means that the product mkmn is an element, and we have seen it's a unique element of M, which maps Kn, which maps 1 under Kn back to 1. Because of the uniqueness, this means that M, the M corresponding to the product Kn, is Mk times Mn. And that shows this phi is a homomorphism. Because it's a bijection, that means phi is an isomorphism. Okay. Right. So, yeah, finally, last statement, why is N not abelian? If N was abelian, then N cross M would be abelian, right? And would be transitive. But the only way how an abelian group can act transitively on some can be a transitive permutation group is if it is regular. That implies regular. Why is this the case? If it's transitive, the action corresponds to the action on the cosets of a subgroup. What is the kernel of the action on the cosets of a subgroup? That's the intersection of the conjugates. If the group is abelian, that means this subgroup would be the point stabilizer. If the group is abelian, conjugates don't do anything. Well, but to have trivial kernel, that means the point stabilizer has to be trivial. Right, so that's why abelian and transitive implies regular, and that would imply that the order of n cross m would be equal to the order of omega. But we have already seen that the order of n and m both individually is the order of omega. That can't happen. Okay. Right, so that proves this lemma, and what we get as a corollary is that if G primitive is primitive on omega, then the SOCL of G as an abstract group is isomorphic to T cross T. And I will write this sometimes as T and then to the power cross K if I have K copies. Because sometimes I want to really denote how many copies I have. So this is just a notation I use to make things easier. And we call such a group homogeneous of type T. The SOCL of G is homogeneous of type T. Okay. Right. Okay. So, this is the first big result here. If we have a primitive group, the SOCL is homogeneous of this, of type some simple group. Okay. Right. Oh, sorry.
Sorry. This is probably stupid, but
no.
But our both of these are actually necessary. We showed not A implies B. It could just be that A is always false.
No.
Is there a nice small example
yes.
where the SOCL is...
Is minimally normal. Yes, for example, take A5.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Yep, great.
Actually, part B is in some way the rarer case.
Okay.
Part A, basically, if you take any primitive group, you know... It is in part A. You need to think and search to find something which lies in part B. And can I give you an obvious... No, I don't think I can yet give you... I can give you the group, but there is a little bit of work to be able to then actually see that it is primitive. Okay. Okay. Right. So, this simple group T can be abelian or it can be non-abelian. And that's the first big dichotomy I'm going to do. So, I will now first look at the case that T is abelian, then the circle of G is also abelian. So that's the first case in a case distinction. So, now consider first the case that T is abelian, and that implies that the circle of G is also abelian. And what is T? Then T would have to be isomorphic to a cyclic group of prime order. Okay. So, and there we get the following theorem. So let's assume that G is primitive group on omega, and that the circle of G is abelian. So G would be a subgroup of the symmetric group on omega. Okay. What I claim in this case, that the order of omega must be p to the m for some prime p. Prime p, and that would be the same as the order of the circle of G. And we have that the group G is actually a semi-direct product. G is a semi-direct product of the circle with the point stabilizer. And I'm just picking one point. I can pick whatever point I want. They're all conjugate. So it's just a semi-direct product. And if I have a semi-direct product, I need to describe, this is basically described by an action, right? The action of this subgroup on there. And that action actually is the conjugation. Within the semi-direct product, that action is the conjugation action. Okay. With where the stabilizer in G of 1 acts irreducibly and faithfully on the circle of G, which would be Cp to the k. Let me call it M because of the write-up I wrote, called it MCP to the M, which would be the same as FP to the M if I look at it as a vector space. Okay, right? The circle is abelian, so the circle is isomorphic to CP, P cross CP cross CP cross CP, some number of copies, M copies, so that's why I have CP to the M. Okay. If I write this group additively, I have the additive structure of the field with p elements, fp to the m, cross fp to the m, cross fp to the m, as an additive group. And that I get for free also as an fp vector space, with fp just acting by the obvious, add an element that often to itself. Right? So, I can consider in this case the socle as an m-dimensional vector space. Okay, so if I have an action on the vector space, and that action is clearly linear. I mean, clearly, okay, you need to write down one line to check it is linear, but that's not hard to see. Basically, that the action is by homomorphisms, group homomorphisms, says in the additive world, the homomorphisms become linear transformations. So I have a linear action. I can talk about it as an action by matrices. Okay, so if we have a group acting by matrices on a vector space, I can talk about irreducibility. Right? I had defined this, I think, last week. No, there is no subspace which is invariant under the action. And faithfully just means if I take the homomorphism from this group to the group of matrices, that homomorphism has trivial kernel. There is no element in there which acts trivially, apart from the identity. So that just means only the identity acts trivially. Okay. Right. So how does this situation look? Or shall I? Well, no. Let me prove that first, and we'll see in the course of the proof. We'll see how this group looks like and what is happening, and then I'll talk a bit more about this. Okay. Right. So, okay. So let's prove this. So, if the socle is abelian, I have seen already as a consequence of this, the socle must have the structure CP cross CP cross CP. So, if the socle of G is abelian, that means the socle of G is isomorphic to CP m times direct product with itself, and that defines me a prime P, and defines me a multiplicity m, and tells me that the socle of G has order P to the m. Right? The socle itself is an abelian group. It's a normal subgroup of a transitive group. Normal subgroups of transitive groups normal subgroups of primitive groups have to act transitively. So the socle is abelian, it is transitive. Well, abelian and transitive implies regular. So the socle acts regularly, so the cardinality of the socle is the same as the cardinality of omega. And we have this bit for very, very cheap. Okay. So, right. So I now want to get this semi-direct product structure. Let S be the point stabilizer in G of 1. So what I get is, in the structure, I have my group G here, I have the socle of G somewhere here, and I have this point stabilizer also there. These are two subgroups. Okay. And what I want to see is how are they related, what do they generate together, how do they intersect. Okay. So, why? First, I want to see together they must generate the whole group. Why is this the case? Well, the point stabilizer cannot contain a normal subgroup. Why is this the case? If you have a transitive group, so I claim that the socle of G cannot be contained in S, because S cannot contain a normal subgroup. Why is this the case? We have a transitive permutation group. Transitive permutation group, the action is equivalent to the action on the cosets of the point stabilizer. What is the kernel of the action on the cosets of the point stabilizer? That's the intersection of the conjugates of the point stabilizer. Right? Any normal subgroup contained in S would have to lie in the intersection of the conjugates of S. So this is just a small, this is a small argument, and this doesn't really need primitivity. This is just whenever you have a transitive group, the point stabilizer cannot contain a normal subgroup, a proper normal subgroup. Let N be a normal subgroup of G which is contained in S. Then N must lie in the intersection of the conjugates of S. Right? Because N will lies in S, then N to the G must lie in S to the G. But N to the G is N, because N is normal. Okay? So that would imply N to the G would lie in S to the G for arbitrary conjugates, and then N lies in the intersection of these. But this intersection is trivial because the group acts transitively. That is, the conjugate of a point stabilizer is the stabilizer of the mapped point. So, why is this the case? S to the G is the stabilizer in G of 1 to the G. And that is something which always holds. If you're mapping a point, you're conjugating the stabilizer, and that's very easily seen. If I want to stabilize not the point 1 but the point 2, if I want to see what elements are there, well, let's first map with an element 2 to 1. I'm stabilizing the point 1, and then let's map it back. And I'm mapping back with the inverse of the element as I mapped initially. Right? So that shows me that the conjugate of the point stabilizer is exactly the stabilizer of the map point. And that is something which holds in general for permutation groups.
Should have written it. That probably down as a lemma.
If G is a subgroup of the symmetric omega, then the stabilizer in G of the point omega to the G is the same as the stabilizer in G of omega conjugated with the element of G. And why is this the case? Basically, that's just writing down so that this conjugate clearly stabilizes little omega. But if omega to the G and omega must have stabilizers of same order because they are in the same orbit, the index of the stabilizer is the length of the orbit. So if one is contained in the other, that's sufficient to show that they're equal if they have the same order. Okay? And the other property is if G is transitive, then the intersection of conjugates of the stabilizer in G of some point is trivial. That's a general fact about permutation groups, and basically that's what I'm using here. Yeah, that the intersection is trivial, that's basically the argument why the intersection is trivial. So, what I have seen is the socle cannot be contained in S. S cannot contain any normal sum. Right? So far, everything okay? Mm-hmm. Good. Well, now I'm using that I have a primitive group. If the group is primitive, the point stabilizer is maximal. So, because the socle is not contained in there, the socle and the point stabilizer together will generate something which is strictly larger than the point stabilizer. Right? That's just saying it's not contained in there. So they generate something which is strictly larger. But because the group is primitive, the point stabilizer is maximal. So anything strictly larger is just the group G. So it means that the group generated by the socle of G and S is strictly larger than S. And that implies, because S is maximal, that the socle of G and S together is to be the whole group G. Okay, so the socle and the point stabilizer together generate the whole group. That's half of the semidirect problem. The other part I need to show, they intersect trivially. Okay? So, let's assume that was not the case. Let's assume the point stabilizer. Now consider the point stabilizer intersected with a socle. Okay. I claim this is normal in the socle of G. Why is this the case? Because the socle of G is abelian. Any subgroup in an abelian group is normal. Okay? But it's also normal in S. Why is this the case? Because intersecting a subgroup with a normal subgroup always will give me something which is normal in that subgroup. Right? So, therefore, S intersected with the socle of G is normal in the group generated by S and the socle of G, which I have just seen as G. Okay? Right. But from what we've done before, we have seen the socle is minimally normal. Right? Because that was this lemma I've proven before. In a primitive group, the socle is either minimally normal or it's a direct product of two non-abelian groups. So, if the socle is abelian, it is minimally normal. So, if the intersection is also normal in G, and the socle is minimally normal, it means the intersection has to be trivial. Okay, so they must both intersect trivially, and I get a semi. Okay, that gives me the semi-direct product. Right? So, the only thing remaining is to show that the point stabilizer, when acting on the socle, acts irreducibly. And yeah, and faithfully. So, right. If S did not act irreducibly, well, if it's not acting irreducibly, there exists a submodule. That's the definition of irreducible. Right? There exists a proper submodule. Let Q be a proper okay. So submodule means a subspace which is invariant under the action. Okay. Here, and that's one of the things which one can do very easily in algebra, is to write substructure symbols without saying what in what category you live, what kind of structure you have. In this case, luckily, it doesn't matter. If I'm a subspace, I'm closed under additions and inverses in the additive world. But going back to the multiplicative world of the group, it means I'm closed under products and under inverses, so it also is a subgroup. So it is a subgroup, not of S, of the socle of G, of course, because that's where I'm acting on, right? So I would have a subgroup of the socle, and okay, and what does submodule mean? Submodule means is the set is closed under the action of the group. So this would mean Q is closed under conjugation by S. That's the module property. Okay, so I would have a proper subgroup of the socle which is closed under conjugation by S. But the socle is abelian. Q is in any case closed under conjugation by the socle. It's an abelian group. So it's closed under conjugation by both of them, and both of them generate G. So that implies, because the socle is abelian, that Q would be a normal subgroup of G. But the socle is minimally normal. That cannot happen. So that shows that the action of the point stabilizer is on the socle, is that this point stabilizer acts irreducibly on the socle. Why is this action faithful? The kernel of this action What would be the kernel of this action? It's elements of the point stabilizer which act trivially by conjugation on the socle. Well, if they act trivially by conjugation on the socle, it means they centralize the socle. So it must lie in the centralizer in G of the socle of G. Okay, but if you have a normal subgroup, the centralizer of the normal subgroup is also a normal subgroup. It's the kernel of the conjugation action on the socle. Okay, so the centralizer would be a normal subgroup of G. If it's a normal subgroup, it must contain a minimal normal subgroup. But there is only one minimal normal subgroup, namely the Sokal. So, the centralizer of the Sokal clearly must contain the Sokal. The Sokal is transitive, so the point stabilizer is semi-regular. Sorry, so the centralizer of the Sokal is semi-regular. The centralizer of the Sokal can't be larger than the domain where I'm acting on, which is already the Sokal. So the centralizer of the Sokal is the Sokal of G. So what goes in here is the Sokal is transitive. So is this the centralizer of the Sokal is semi-regular. Semi-regular. And the Sokal being abelian is contained in the centralizer of the Sokal. That is basically the argument why these two are equal. Okay? So, the kernel of this action lies in the centralizer of the Sokal, which is the Sokal, and it lies, of course, in S, because I have S acting. The kernel lies in S. So it lies in the intersection, which I've seen is trivial. So the kernel lies in the Sokal intersected S, which is trivial. Okay. So that implies that this action is faithful. Okay. And that's all what this theorem claims. So, if I have a primitive group whose Sokal is abelian, I know I can look at this group as a semi-direct product of a vector space with an irreducible matrix group. Okay. Okay. Right. What I now want to see is that the same way works the other way around. Not just every primitive group of this kind must have this structure, but if I'm constructing something like that, I will get a primitive group. So, for the converse, let n be cp to the m. I'm taking a m-dimensional vector space over the field with p elements. And let's take S, a group, a subgroup of GL mp, which is irreducible. So I'm identifying the point stabilizer with its matrix action on the vector space because this, I had said the action is faithful. I could have said S is a group which acts and there is a homomorphism of the action which is faithful, but then I need to carry that homomorphism through all the time. So that's why I'm looking at S as a group of matrices. Okay? So S lies in there and is irreducible. Okay. Now consider the semi-direct product of N with S. Okay, given by the matrix action. Okay. So, I can form, I have a group, I have another group which in an obvious way acts on there, namely as matrices. And what I claim is this group would be, I could consider as a primitive group. So then, well, let's go give it a name. Well, let's call it G. Okay, then the action of G on the cosets of S is transitive. That comes for free. Whenever I'm acting on the cosets of a subgroup, I'm acting transitively. It's transitive, faithful, so there isn't anything in the kernel, and is primitive. So I can consider this group G as a primitive permutation group. Well, what is the degree? The degree is P to the N. So, and that is something I have to show, of course. But that would be the converse of this theorem, right? Not only if I have a primitive group with abelian socle, it is a semi-direct product of a vector of the socle, which is a vector space with a with a group which I can consider as an irreducible matrix group. But vice versa, if I take this semi-direct product of a vector space of a group which I can consider as a vector space with an irreducible matrix group, I get a primitive group. So that is a complete complete description of groups of this type. I can get them as irreducible matrix groups. Okay, so why is this the case? So, transitive I get for free. Okay, why would it be primitive? I'm acting on the coset, so primitive would correspond to the point stabilizer is maximal. If the action is not primitive, there exists some subgroup do I want to give it a name? Probably I should. Well, T is not good. Well, let's call it R, which is properly containing S and is properly contained in G. Right? Primitive means the point stabilizer is maximal. I'm acting on the cosets of a subgroup. That subgroup would be the point stabilizer. If the action is not primitive, the subgroup is not maximal. So, what I have here, I have G here, I have N here, I have S, and I know already by construction I have the semi-direct product construction. I formed a semi-direct product. So, let's assume I have a subgroup R here. Then I can consider the intersection of R with N, and let's call it Q. Let Q equal R intersection N. Okay. So, by the isomorphism theorems, I know that the index of S in... So what I'm now just doing is I look at R. Sorry, yeah. So I'm covering this top rhombus. I can look at R. R is this is something I can always do when I have such a situation. And basically, that is a consequence. This is something which follows from one of the isomorphisms. Namely, What I claim is that this index has to be the same as this index. Okay. I don't have immediately, the other way around is even easier. This factor group is isomorphic to this group. So then I get the same thing. But if I'm intersecting the other way around, I can't have isomorphisms, but I still get indices. Then the order of Q is the index of S in R. And for that, I need N to be normal. Otherwise, it will not. If I just have two subgroups, that does not work. But if this one is normal, I can intersect down here and get this nice rhombus shape preserved. And that is basically one of the isomorphism theorems. Okay. If you're uncomfortable with it and you looked your the isomorphism theorems up and you can't find it, let me know next time and I'll show you why this holds. It might be, I don't know exactly which version of the isomorphism theorems you've proven. If for some reason this property was left out, I'll fix it. Okay. So what I get in particular, this can't be trivial. So this means that the trivial subgroup is properly contained in Q and is properly contained in N. Right? And that's by order argument, the same argument that this has the same indices, these indices are the same, these two indices are the same. Okay? Right. Okay. So I would have a proper subgroup of N. Well, what can I tell about Q? Q is the intersection of R with N. So it's the intersection of a subgroup with a normal subgroup. So it is normal in that subgroup. N is abelian. Any subgroup of N is abelian. So it is normal in N. And that means it would be normal in... So it's normal in R. What does normal mean? Normal means is... it is invariant under conjugation. As a set, under conjugation. That's just what normal, or, well, depends how you define it, but that's an easy, obvious consequence from being normal. It's invariant under conjugation by R. And then, of course, it's also invariant under conjugation by S. So, Q is a subgroup of N. Well, and if I write it additively, I would have it as a subspace of N. It's invariant under the action of R, and therefore also invariant under the action of S. So, Q is a subspace... well, and the is under suitable re-identification is a subspace of N invariant under the action of S. Okay. But what is the action of S? The action of S is this action of S as matrix group. That's how I constructed the semi-direct product. So I have a subspace, a proper subspace, which would be invariant under the matrix action. That is saying S acts reducibly. That's the definition of irreducible. But as said, it's irreducible. So that contradicts the fact that S is irreducible. So I cannot have any such subgroup here. if I'm constructing this, constructing it this way, I will get, that would contradict irreducibility, so I get a privative action. Okay. Finally, why is this action faithful? Why is this action faith that follows? Basically, because I can look at the action on the cosets of S. And I want to describe this action looking at the time, let me give proof that next time. Basically, I think I need to translate it once more to the matrix world, and then it follows immediately. But it's not hard. It's just a little bit to write down, and since I'm already over time, I don't want to do this now. Okay, and then next time I will do examples of. So far, I've proven that structure. I think it will be helpful now to look at examples of such groups, because then I think one understands better what is actually happening there. Okay? Thank you very much. I see you either have coffee now or late is what you say.
Oh, yes.
What? Oh.